Well, good morning. I failed to state at the beginning of our first oral argument for the viewers at home, it looks a little different. That's because we're not here at the Supreme Court of Ohio. We're actually at off-site court at the University of Akron. Thank you for coming for the second argument, State of Ohio versus Darnell Eatman. For the appellant, Mr. Costco.
Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, my name is John Costco. I am an assistant prosecuting attorney for Cuyahoga County representing the state of Ohio, the appellant in this case. I request 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. What the state is asking for in this case is that this court adopt a proposition that when a party to a criminal case, prosecutor, state, or defendant, shows probable cause that a witness is material to their case and probable cause that this witness is not cooperating and refuses to come to court, the trial court shall issue a material witness warrant.
So why did you not file an oath or affirmation or affidavit in making the request to have these witnesses picked up and brought to court?
We felt the better practice would be to file briefs. We can give more information to the court using a brief, setting facts, and then going on the record where the judge can question us. And in this case, the defense questioned us. And
is that what the statute requires, though?
The statute requires no affidavit. This doesn't say anything in the statute about an affidavit.
What about the criminal rules?
The criminal rules, I don't say anything about an affidavit. The affidavit language comes from a case called Dorsey, where a sheriff's deputy walked in and said, "Judge, here, sign this. It's a material witness warrant." The judge signed it, and so the Court of Appeals said, "There, at minimum, there should be an affidavit." But there is nothing in the statute that says that there has to be an affidavit. That's why we didn't do it this way, I think, because we filed multiple motions, pages long. I mean, it much went on the record, much more information for the court than we could have supplied in an affidavit.
Counsel,
so
did you go
served?
On? Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Counsel, did you go on the record and make this request prior to the trial date?
Oh, absolutely. This case, the two witnesses we're talking about here are very material. We have a victim and his mother, and Mr. Eatman was kind enough after he allegedly shot his uncle to pieces, literally, to call Miss Ford and tell her, "I'm sorry, I just shot your son to pieces," okay? They were hot to trot, as it's called, initially. But it wasn't for 16 months that Mr. Eatman was arrested. And when we got to 16 months, these people wanted nothing to do with this case. So we knew we had to get in front of this. And so we started filing motions right then and there, months before the trial, to have a material witness warrant. Because in our experience, usually when people know that there's going to be a warrant or there is a warrant, they become cooperative. Anyway,
well,
that's...
Was the subpoena served?
Subpoenas were sent out in the usual way to witnesses. Whether or not the witnesses got them, they never said. Certainly they knew when the trial date was.
Anything in the record showing service of the subpoena?
Only in the docket. It doesn't show service. It shows that they were sent out.
You said they were sent out in the usual way, but the rules provide a way to obtain service. They weren't sent out in that way, were they?
Personal service? No, they were not sent out that way. Well, no, I take that back. Early on, we got a tip that from his mother, that Mr. Miller was residing in Lake County, and we did have the Lake County sheriffs try to serve him. They weren't successful.
I guess I'm just struggling to understand why we're here. I mean, if you had served the witness and the witness failed to appear, the judge could have issued a warrant. I mean, the judge would have had to issue a warrant, but there's no question about that. But that's not what happened. Why not just serve him?
People who don't want to come to court are very, very adept at avoiding personal service.
Sure, attorneys deal with that all the time, but attorneys get personal service. If you can't get personal service, then there's a process in the rules to do that. But
there's nothing in the statute that says we have to get personal service. It just says probable cause.
Well, yeah, and the Constitution says that no warrant shall be issued except on oath or affirmation, and there's no oath or affirmation here.
Well, then, you know, I addressed that in my reply brief. The courts issue every day arrest warrants called KPSs with absolutely no oath or affirmation.
But isn't that's different because you had someone who was ordered to appear who didn't appear, and that occurred in the judge's presence.
Well, we did send out subpoenas. We did not send out, we tried personal subpoenas, we couldn't get it. And I think it's different because in those cases, it's a court officer asking the court to send out, to issue a warrant.
Mr. Costco, your office never really ever spoke to either of the people that you were trying to get to court, even before you filed the case, correct?
We did not speak because they wouldn't speak to us.
So
before we filed the case? No, not before we filed the case.
So
16 months later, they wouldn't speak to us.
You're gonna go to trial, never having spoken to these witnesses, and you didn't have personal service, and you wanted the court to send somebody out to pick them up.
Yeah, because it
without,
was...
Without, just based on your word in court, without an affidavit, without an oath, an affirmation, nothing, right?
That's correct. That's exactly what we wanted. Because these people wouldn't talk to us. It was obvious that they aren't coming. They're going to avoid any kind of service. I mean, they were so brazen, Ms. Ford was so brazen, she called up the detective when the detective tried to talk to her at home and at her employment. She calls the Detective Bureau and chews him out for, don't bug me anymore.
Is this in the record?
Pardon me?
Is this in the record?
It's in the record, yes.
So, but if you can't take just that one step of providing something that's an oath or an affirmation or an affidavit so that it's made under penalty of perjury or that basically where an oath's been taken, I mean, doesn't that like lead us to going closer to a police state where basically the prosecutor can just use the court as an instrument to say, bring this person in without any safeguards that the Dorsey case would provide?
Well, how would an affidavit, I could put everything I said on the record. In fact, the judge could swear me in and that would be an affidavit.
But you didn't ask the judge to do that.
No, I didn't. The judge didn't ask to do that. Nobody, the judge would never challenged our recitation of the facts. I mean, if she had, we would have wanted to swear us in. We would have been sworn in. But here, this statute, there is absolutely no uniformity how this statute is being applied. All right, there are judges that will never give a material witness warrant. There are judges that will never refuse a material witness warrant. And then there's judges in the middle who insist on all kinds of conditions. All right, the statute says when there's probable cause, you shall issue. And what we need from, there is no Ohio Supreme Court case on this issue. If X, Y, and Z is met, then you shall issue a warrant. So if the court wants personal service, which is not required by the statute, or wants affidavits, that's fine. We'll do that. But right now, as it stands, as I said, there was nothing in what we said that would have been different from an affidavit other than just being sworn. And it was clear that these witnesses weren't going to appear. These statutes are so important. They only come up in the most serious cases, murder, attempted murder, felonious assault, rape, aggravated robbery. That's when they come up. We don't have shoplifting cases where we have material witness problems.
The statute doesn't say that, right?
What's that?
The statute doesn't qualify which crimes it can be
no,
used for.
No, there's nothing there, but I'm telling you as a practical matter, that's when these things come up. And there's another issue. These things often come up when we've already started the trial. The witness calls the prosecutor, okay, I'll be there at 8:30 tomorrow morning. 8:30 comes around, they're not here. They won't answer the phone. We send a police car out to see if they're all right. They're not at home. So we're already in jeopardy because we sworn in a jury. Now we have to, we just have to go before the judge like we did here, but this time in the context of being in trial, and ask the judge, judge, you need to issue a material witness warrant.
But that last example was different than this case. In that last example, the prosecutor had contact with the witness, confirmed the date and time of trial. There was an acquiescence that, yes, I will be there. That's different than here, because this witness doesn't know a trial date or the time, well, nor made a commitment to come, correct?
No, I disagree, Judge. I think, you know, we send out correspondence. We don't want to arrest our witnesses. That's not a good thing for the prosecutor to do. We send out correspondence. We make phone calls. We assign a witness victim counselor to them. All right? They know these people were so determined not to go. They don't want to know when there's going to be a trial. So,
counsel,
I don't see the difference in that.
Counsel, I could see where a panel might agree with you that perhaps in this particular case there was an abuse of discretion by not issuing it. But how do we issue a rule that says that you have to do it in every single case? Don't judges need discretion to differentiate, like, the facts that Justice Kennedy just laid out?
But we, okay, yes, they do, all right? But this still comes down to a factual issue and a legal issue, and there should be a de novo type review of that. And yes, judges could circumvent this rule if by saying, well, in my opinion, you didn't have probable cause. You didn't prove probable cause. Okay, what I'm saying is, if on the record there is probable cause, we need something from the Ohio Supreme Court that says, look, there's probable cause here, because in this case the judge didn't challenge probable cause, didn't challenge anything. She dismissed the motions the same day we filed them. And that's why we kept filing them, because we knew these witnesses are never going to come in, and our only hope is changing the judge's mind to get them. They didn't want to talk to us. They didn't want anything to do with it. Now, there was obviously a family connection. I don't know if that influenced them. I'm guessing that it did, and the time lapse of 16 months. However, as I said before, this usually arises when we are already in trial and somebody doesn't show up. And there, we don't have time for an affidavit. We just have to go before the court and lay out the facts. That's what we did here. All right, in this case, the court provided no reason why they were denying the motion until the very end. Then the 8th District said clearly in their opinion, personal service is not required by the statute. Then they went on to state, then after they said that, that the fact that there was no personal service proves that they didn't have probable cause. Well, this obviously their opinion in Holland, which when that came out, I thought that was going to end all this stuff. But still, we need the Ohio Supreme Court to weigh in on this and let it be and make a rule that if there is probable cause, however you want to determine probable cause, the judge has to, no discretion, shall issue a material witness warrant. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Justice Kennedy. May it please the court. John Martin on behalf of Darnell Eatman, the defendant appellee herein. There are basically three problems with the state's argument. Three reasons why the trial judge in this case did not abuse her discretion in refusing to grant a material witness arrest warrant on the morning of trial. First, The nature and timing of the motion being as trial was about to start. Second, the amount of evidence in support of that motion. And third, the medium of the motion, the fact that it was not under oath as required by the Fourth Amendment. And the only reason why the constitutional issue gets third ranking in my hierarchy is because of this court's well-established precedent that it will not reach constitutional questions if a non-constitutional answer is available. So if I can go back to that first point, the nature and timing of the state's motion. A trial judge on the morning of trial who is asked to grant a material witness arrest warrant before jeopardy has attached.
Well, Mr. Martin, how did the state know whether the witness would attend until trial time?
Your Honor, they would not necessarily know before trial time, although in this case, the state had been persisting in efforts to get material witness arrest warrants back at the end of April and in May, when at a time when they had not properly served these witnesses and had somewhat cavalierly stated in the end of their May 10th motions, service of a subpoena is not required for a material witness arrest warrant. And so the fact of the matter is that, yes, there may be times when in a situation like this, they're not going to know. And so the appropriate thing to do in that situation may very well be to say, we need a continuance, something they had done before, just for a day while you allow us to find the witnesses.
What if the state is up against speedy trial rights? Time for a speedy trial.
2945.72 does have a catch-all provision for tolling speedy trial for good cause shown in the interest of justice, and therefore, if the trial judge made a record, that would take care of that issue. In this case, the state did not have sufficient evidence, information to support their request to begin with. What we had here was a trial that was continued on May 15th to July 9th, some 54 days or so, if my math was correct. And during those 54 days, the trial judge, when she questioned the assistant prosecuting attorney, asked, "What have you done during that time?" Well, we had residential service. In other words, we dropped it off at the house, which is within the rules, but the least efficacious manner in which service can take place under Criminal Rule 4, at the mother's house, at Ms. Ford's residence, at the same time that they had already put into pleadings before that and repeated, I believe, on the record that day, that they knew that Mr. Miller was, in fact, in Painesville. Now, residential service in Cleveland might be the least efficacious and permissible means of service of someone who lives at that residence, but it is no service with respect to somebody who's in Lake County. And so already we have an issue. But the other aspect of it is this: the trial judge has discretion in this regard. And to say, okay, why is it that I have to take the extraordinary step of an arrest of Ms. Ford after the only thing you were able to do in the last 7 weeks was to have dropped off a subpoena at her house?
Under what circumstances, then, do you feel the trial court, it would be appropriate for the trial court judge to issue a material witness warrant?
The totality of the circumstances needs to demonstrate that the witness will not honor the subpoena. And in this particular case,
Ms. Ford had not demonstrated that. The state of Ohio refers back to the April, I believe it was 23rd discussion, conversation between Ms. Ford and the detective. That was after the detective had gone to Ms. Ford's home and business, not with a subpoena, but with correspondence, according to the April 26th and May 10th motions, that he had left a writing. And she calls him back and makes it very clear to her that, to the detective rather, that she has no interest in wanting to cooperate. She doesn't want to come to court. But not wanting to come to court is different than saying that I will refuse to come to court if subpoenaed.
Was the trial judge aware that the state had never spoken directly with either witness at the time that it made its rulings?
Well, when we say that the state had not spoken with the witness, the trial court was aware with respect to Ms. Ford that a detective investigator had spoken with Ms. Ford, and there was a discussion about the fact that someone who had at first identified themselves as Mr. Miller and then hung up after saying that he wasn't Mr. Miller, that there had been those conversations. And I can't remember if that particular second conversation was with a prosecutor or with a detective.
But the state wouldn't even know what these witnesses were going to say.
And the trial court was aware of that fact. The state had been candid in talking about its lack of contact with these witnesses, but had turned around and said, well, this means they won't cooperate. Interestingly, and the 8th District pointed this out, on April 23rd, when Ms. Ford was was indicating that she did not want to cooperate, she also told the detective that Mr. Miller was at the Painesville residence. So this is not a person who has thumbed her nose entirely at the process.
So she did receive service, though.
She had not received service.
Not then, but you said there was residential service.
There was residential service later on. Whether she received it or not, I don't know.
But that's different than Mr. Miller, who was out in Painesville.
Right. Mr. Miller doesn't get...
Residential service was allegedly perfected on her residence.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
So in a nutshell, you're just saying the state just did not do enough here to invoke the courts, to compel the court to issue this. Trial court did not abuse its discretion, and the 8th District Court of Appeals was right in affirming. So the state just needs to do more next time. Lesson learned.
Yes, Your Honor, that is exactly the case. And in that, this is so fact-bound. And in that, this does not require this court to grapple with the constitutional question. This is a case that is a candidate to be dismissed as improvidently allowed. Because at the end of the day, this particular set of facts not being sufficient was already made clear in the 8th District's case. That 8th District precedent is there, and there's no reason that this court need to speak to such a fact-bound determination.
Wouldn't it help litigants across the state and the rest of the lower courts if we spoke and said, this is a case where prosecutors all over the state, you need to do more than happen here, particularly in order, the people of the state of Ohio are entitled to justice too, represented through the prosecutor's office. And in order to prosecute someone for a crime, and you've got uncooperative witnesses that you need to have to come to this trial, shouldn't we say, if we were to find in your favor, or if we find against you, this was enough or this isn't enough? Wouldn't that set some standard?
Yes, Your Honor, it would set some standard. And in that, at the end of the day, my client still wins. I'm not going to tell you that you have to go improvidently allowed in that sense. And so what we have here, though, is it's an inadequate showing by the state. And by the way, I want to go back. The April 3rd subpoena that was sent to Mr. Miller was sent by mail, which was not a recognized form of service. They dropped it in with a letter to tell Mr. Miller that he was supposed to come to an April 3rd pretrial. And whether he received that letter or not is not clear from the record. You know, I'm not saying that personal service has to be perfected in every case before a material witness arrest warrant can issue. I mean, obviously, if the service, if the subpoena server is having to chase after a person who's running away and refusing to take the subpoena, you don't have personal service, but you now have articulable facts as to the fact that this person will not submit to the process of the court, whereas you don't have that with respect to either of these two people. Reluctance does not mean refusal. That she does not want to cooperate does not mean that she will not cooperate. I dare say that there were times when I didn't want to go to class when I was in law school, or high school for that matter.
Surely you jest.
No, Your Honor. and it usually shows when there's criminal procedure questions that come up. But the fact is that I still went. And so therefore, while I may have been reluctant, I did not refuse, at least most times. Now,
when you talked about in the beginning, I wrote it down, Jeopardy, before Jeopardy has attached.
Yes.
Are you placing some temporal aspect to your argument?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. And the reason why that is an important consideration is because the minute Jeopardy attaches, there's no going back, obviously. The defendant cannot be tried a second time. For the trial judge in this case to have acceded to the defendant's or to the state's request would have created a game of beat the clock. Okay, here's your material witness arrest warrant. Let's get the jury up here. Start picking the jury. The minute that jury is sworn, we have Jeopardy. Where's your witness? I've got 12 people waiting. And you have that kind of situation where a trial judge, frankly, if the trial judge had wanted to be more demanding, the trial judge would not have dismissed without prejudice, allowing the state to come back. The trial judge would have said, I'm not giving you your material witness arrest warrant. You don't want to dismiss? Fine, box them up. And had that happened, the state of Ohio would have found itself on the losing end of a criminal Rule 29 motion.
Okay.
Because they would not have been able to make a prima facie case. And so you don't abuse your discretion as a trial judge when you save the state from itself in that type of situation. And so, yes, there is a temporal aspect to all this, the timing of when you're asking for that material witness arrest warrant. If the state had come back with compelling evidence in an affidavit that said, you know, 2 weeks before trial, saying, we have every indication that we have a problem, here's why. We've served, we've been refused, whatever the case may be. Then
is an affidavit necessary? They're all officers of the court. They make a representation on the record.
Yes, Your Honor. To address the constitutional question, it is. The plain language of the Fourth Amendment is no warrant shall issue upon except upon oath or affirmation. When the framers set forth the Fourth Amendment, they also set forth the Sixth Amendment concerning the effective assistance of counsel. So we know that the framers knew about attorneys, because in the same document that they're talking about an oath in the Fourth, they also are recognizing what the role of counsel in the Sixth. If they had wanted to say an attorney's word is good enough, they would have so said. And indeed, and Justice Kennedy, if I may continue my answer.
May finish.
Thank you. if in fact we have an attorney exception to the oath or affirmation, then that attorney exception is going to apply to both sides of the aisle. I took the same oath as did my friends from the prosecutor's office. And so therefore, we're going to have arrest, material witness arrest warrants at the request of counsel. That is not what the framers considered to be adequate when it came to depriving a person of their liberty. They wanted a neutral and detached magistrate to decide this on the base, or judicial officer to decide this on the basis of sworn testimony. And the reason why a capias is distinguished, and this would be the end of this answer if Your Honor please. The reason why a capias is different is because when a capias issues, for example, from the arraignment room because a defendant hasn't shown up, the capias is an arrest warrant on the underlying offense, and the probable cause has been determined on the underlying offense either by the grand jury or through a sworn complaint. And so, therefore, the judicial officer does have that satisfaction of knowing that probable cause has come from something other than an attorney's word, no matter how reputable the attorney may be, as in the case of my friends today. If there are no further questions, I thank the court and reiterate my prayer.
Thank you. Mr. Costco, you have a minute and 45 seconds left.
All right, if we are going to make personal service the linchpin of whether or not probable cause is exists, then we are changing the statute. There are contempt of court statutes where people are served with a subpoena and don't come. The legislature saw fit that we need something more. We need something with teeth in it. People can avoid service, all right, personal service, and people can make their intentions known long before the trial is set or a date is set. Forget it, I'm not coming, I don't want to prosecute. You see this in domestic violence cases all the time. The state has to have some kind of statute where it has some teeth in it that if you can't get service, if you can't convince them to come to court, that they need to be arrested. And as far as discretion, discretionary standard, now, I don't deny that the court has the duty to determine whether there's probable cause, but once that's determination is there is probable cause, there should be no discretion at that point. That's what we need here. There's a sense in the community that, just like Mrs. Ford basically said to the detective, you know, you can't do anything to me, and that type of attitude permeates a lot of people in the community, and that is very bad for justice for both sides. So I'm done.
Thank you. We'll take this matter under advisement. You'll get a decision. Thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate it.